morning, everyone. Happy day after Christmas and happy first night. Welcome to the second episode of Non-Traditional Student. This is my fourth attempt to record this. The first attempt ended up being ridiculously long and hard to edit. The second and third attempt, there was a lot of weird extra noises. So we're trying again. Hopefully this goes better. I am Allison. I am the non-traditional student. I am mother of three, a 19-year-old who is on the same career path. He's trying to become a chef. He's just choosing to go about it, working his way up the chain, kind of. That's something we could talk more about at a different time. Got a junior high student and a toddler. My husband and I are both, well, he's 40 and I'm 39, and that's what kind of makes me the non-traditional student. I've already grown up, had a career, had kids, raised one of them to adulthood, and one's almost to adulthood, and start over again and starting over again in my career. So there's that. Tonight's episode is going to be mostly about us actually moving here. It's going to be about finding the house. It's going to be about orientation a little bit. I'll be honest, there's not a whole lot to talk about with the orientation, just some key points. Talk about food somewhat, because it is about becoming a pastry chef. Hopefully I'll get this done before my daughter starts crying. So I hope everyone had a great Christmas. Our Christmas was kind of nice. It was different. It's the first Christmas I've spent in almost 40 years where I wasn't near my family. It was pretty rough in a lot of ways. It was the first Christmas in 40 years where my son wasn't present. We actually went back to my husband's house, his family's house. Because of that, we wanted to not give my son an excuse to dip out entirely. So we were able to see him for a couple of hours, which was kind of nice. Then we just came back to the Chicagoland area. Had a pretty quiet evening. We got home kind of late. We missed some neighborhood activities, which sucked a little bit. We're trying harder to be involved with our neighborhood here because it's a really proactive neighborhood. It's a really nice community. Everyone's pretty friendly with each other. We're actually making really good friends with some people, I feel. And they all, not everyone, but they participate for the most part in trying to promote schools and doing the fundraisers. Like the little high school right across the street is we have a high school and elementary school right up the street from us, and they do a luminary sale from I think the elementary school. We bought the luminaries and didn't get home on time to light them. Like, by the time we got home, everyone else's were burning out, and I forgot to ask our neighbor to do it for us. Remember to ask his daughter to take care of our dogs, but not to ask her dad to help us with, you know, the luminaries. My fault, my bad. I guess we will save them for next year and just buy more next year and have more luminaries, you know? It could be worse, right? And besides that, for Christmas morning, it was pretty low-key. We actually did not get out of pajamas all day, not a single one of us. I tried to make croissants. They were actually like a cinnamon roll croissant I was trying to make, and I totally screwed that up. I did not read the directions as thoroughly as I thought I had for 4 days. I read it as it was only supposed to take about 5 hours total to make these things, and I actually needed closer to 20 hours to make them. My bad. So I started them at 5 in the morning, Christmas morning, and then I was just got to one of the middle steps, and to be fair, when you read the prep time, cook time, and all that, the prep time said it only takes an hour, but I knew better enough to know, well, you know, it's a yeast dough, it's gonna have to rise, so I was like, okay, it's gonna be at least, you know, first process is about 2 hours, I already knew that, because I'm not an idiot, and then I knew between folds, it takes about an hour, so you should only fold croissants like 3 times, so I knew that much. And then there's bake time and the shaping and all that. And, you know, when we make croissants at school, after we shaped them, they only had to proof for like another hour. We didn't have to wait too long. These actually needed to proof a lot longer after you shape the dough. So, you know, that's my fault, my bad. Stuff happens. You know, read the directions. They're not terrible. They're not good, but they're not terrible. They were not light and flaky and everything you dream about with a croissant. They're like a very thick biscuit, I guess, kind of scone-ish in a way. They were better the first day than they are today, that's for sure. I was trying to copy something that I was able to taste from a bakery in downtown Chicago called Beatrix. They make a laminated cinnamon roll. It's really good and flaky and perfect. And then I recently got to try Queen Amand, which is also another laminated pastry. And they put sugar in between all the layers. Like, you know, you always, when they roll the dough before they roll it, whereas with the cinnamon roll, you'd put the cinnamon sugar in it. Then they just put the Queen Amand, you just put sugar in it. Some people put custard in the very center. And then you roll it up, and those anyway, they're both delicious things. If you go to downtown Chicago, you can go to Beatrix and you can try the cinnamon roll I'm talking about. I have a problem with paying that much for it. I only got to try it because someone else had purchased it and gave me a bite. It was wonderful. The buttercream on top was, you know, just that. It was a buttercream. It wasn't anything fancy or great, but the cinnamon roll was worth bragging about. And Queen Amand, I've tried three of them now since I've been here. Never even heard of one until I moved to Chicago. And I've tried one from Pete's Coffee, Peets. It was okay. It wasn't my favorite thing in the world. It was a ginger one, had chunks of candied ginger. I liked it, except for the part where it was old. I tried one from Starbucks that had apples in it. They called it something different, but it was the same thing. It was pretty tasty. And then, of course, we're going to bring you back to Bellbird Bake Shop over in LaGrange. They have them, and that was just an amazing thing. That's why I even bothered to try the other two. Normally, I don't try pastries from especially chain coffee shops because they're usually not very good. But after trying that, it was totally worth trying them somewhere else. Speaking of Pete's Coffee, I don't have any sponsors, guys. That's a second episode. I will say if you ever go there during holiday season, their holiday spice coffee is really good and delicious and worth getting. Really bad for you, by the way. But they also this year, I'm not sure if it's a normal thing. I never tried them until this holiday season. They had a sparkling iced coffee drink. It was a vanilla sparkling iced coffee holiday beverage. I wanted to like it. I didn't. It was not good. I would not suggest it. It was kind of like drinking a sweet coffee flavored cough syrup with some fizz. I just don't do that. Don't ever do that. It was icky. But other than that, we're gearing up for our vacation. We leave a week from today. In 1 week from today, hopefully, we will be checking into a hotel someplace in Georgia, hopefully a little farther out, maybe even almost Florida. Our goal is to leave here at about 5 a.m. If we can make it that far to the northern part of Florida, that'd be great. Sadly, I'm getting a little sick, so of course, that's how it works, isn't it? But beyond that, give me a moment. I can hear my dog scratching at a door because she is an idiot and locked herself in the bathroom. I'll be right back. Okay, now that I'm done going on about pastries and food, at least for a moment, my dog's now locked in my bedroom rather than the bathroom. Hope everyone did have a wonderful Christmas. I hope I made a whole bunch of cookies, but about half of what I normally make, but you know, our new neighbors seemed to enjoy them. They were received really well. Most people were walking back with empty plates within a day, so that's always a good sign that they were enjoyed. But tonight's episode is going to be about, you know, selling our house, finding a house. It was all a huge process. Selling your house, we'll start there. It's a relatively easy process when you think about the steps of it, but it's probably emotionally very one of the more difficult things. You got to purge your house. Anything that really makes it feel like home, you're getting rid of it. got to make it relatively nondescript in order to sell it. So, you know, I had a gold entryway. There was a bright red bathroom, which was not us. I hated that bathroom. The bathroom upstairs was also very personalized. The people lived there before us. It was like being in a cave in a not pleasant way. And these were all things we had to take care of. Anything that just felt overly personal, we were supposed to take care of it. We didn't really do any major updates to anything. We fixed what we could. Like, our porch was rotting away, so we pretty much replaced our whole porch. It cost a lot of money to do that. In order to just get our house listed and to sell it, we had to fix our fence, which was fine. We knew what needed to happen. It was one of the things we had talked about doing, but, you know, trying to sell a house, it actually got done. It gave me an excuse to spend money on plants, so, you know, I was kind of happy, and I was just happy at the idea of getting rid of the goddamn house and getting the hell out of Bettendorf. But then came the actual selling process, which sucked. It sucks listing your house, having very few people even want to come look at it. The houses that were selling fast and still are selling fast in the area are easy flips. In other words, they need a lot of updates, or they're very small, very cheap, very easy to make it look more modern and sell it. Our house was not going to be that easy. It had a bigger yard, had an attached garage, which was pretty rare in the area. Most garages in the area were detached. Most of the homes were very small, what we'll call factory homes. The local factory, Alcoa, had actually popped up a bunch of the houses for workers back in the 40s through 60s. Our house was one of the bigger houses in the area. A lot of the houses were like little two, maybe three bedroom homes. Ours was larger. It was built as a four bedroom home, and then we added a fifth bedroom in the basement. We also have one of the bigger yards. So it was just a nicer house, so a flipper wasn't going to be interested in it. We ended up working with a realtor who was just like, "Hey, you know, I believe I can sell this house for $320. I'm sorry, $320,000. I thought he was nuts. My husband was super thrilled, and he was like, "No, you don't understand. It's gonna be a great deal. If we sell it for this much, I think we could sell it for this much. We're gonna walk away with all this money." I was like, "Yeah, but you know, sure, whatever. I wouldn't pay that for this house, but okay." We didn't sell it for that. In fact, we only had about eight different people walk through our house. Not a one of them was particularly interested. No double looks. Most of those people actually came through. We had three open houses. One of them, no one showed up. And one of them, the realtor's I don't know, sidekick, I guess, showed up late and was putting signs up about 10 minutes after the whole thing started. And we had to call him and be like, "What the hell is going on?" For him to be like, "What do you mean she's not there?" So, you know, that's great. But yeah, no one really showed up. Sadly for us, and for especially this guy, the housing market crashed right about the time we were trying to sell our house. We did all the stuff that we were told to do. We painted our cabinets gray, and I actually picked out a color called Orange Sparkle for our walls. It was very warm, but it did make the house feel bigger and brighter, but it wasn't like obnoxious. It was a very warm color. We painted all our bedroom walls this bluish gray color, which it wasn't unpleasant. It wasn't bad. It was not one I would have picked out, but it was okay. For, you know, trying to get other people to buy it. They tried to talk us into painting our woodwork white, and the answer to that was absolutely not. No, if they want white woodwork, they can do it themselves. I hate white woodwork. I think it's awful. But other than that, you know, we did everything. We weren't able to sell our house. We waited until, like, we couldn't wait anymore because we had already put an offer on the house we have. And went through all that process. Everything took about, it took 30 days to sell the house, it took 30 days to get this house. There was a lot of drama that went with selling our house, unrealized things that cost a lot of money, like things that were up to code when my husband bought the house were no longer up to code. Things that we didn't realize were wrong, like, you know, just hidden things, like, we didn't realize were a problem. When he had an inspection, they were found, and it was just like, "Well, crap, that's not good," and we had to fix it. So we didn't get the $250,000 we were told we were getting. We got less because we had to pay to fix those things. And that's all fine. Like, we're not bitter or angry about that. That's a normal selling your house thing. Like, even with our house, you know, we paid asking price, and yet the sellers didn't get all that money because they had to leave an allowance for some things that had to get done. That's just a normal buying and selling. Hearing what people had to say about our house is kind of rough. And I don't disagree. That's the worst part, is I don't disagree with the little bit of feedback we did get, and we didn't get a whole lot of feedback. Pretty much people just didn't feel our house was worth what we were asking for it. And I can't say I disagree. I did not think it was worth $320,000. I thought the realtor was crazy. I thought 275, 280, probably 290 maximum is what I would ever consider paying for it, but that's me. It was a fair location, but not a great location. It was very busy. It was very loud. There was a lot of rentals around us, a lot of houses that looked like people just didn't give a shit. And, you know, if you're gonna pay that much for a house, especially in that kind of area, you at least want to feel like your neighbors care. And that was not a feeling I got. Like, you know, our immediate next door neighbor to our left did care. They were great. They were a much older couple. They cared. However, the people right next door to our right did not care, and I can't say the appearance of their home and the people across the street probably didn't scare off some buyers. I know if I pulled up to look at a house and I looked right next door and everything is overgrown and kind of crappy looking, I wouldn't be too keen on buying either. So, you know, stuff happens. It wasn't a real in-demand neighborhood for people who had that kind of money, and it was a little too much for people who would love to have been there. That's just the way of it. But now for our house hunt. Our house hunt really much started before we were for sure moving. It started before we even listed our house. You know, we had decided that, yeah, we wanted to move. We were really going to look into it. And the first house we looked at was a dumpster fire. We looked at it in early April. We went to the Cubs season opener the day after Easter, and then the next day we went in to look at this house. Any Chicago fans who remember that weather, it was snowy and rainy and really unpleasant. If you live up kind of between Des Plaines and Crystal Lake, you know that some of those roads actually flood out when the weather's bad. That's something we did run into, so we got rerouted. We couldn't even take the easiest route from where we were. We had ended up spending the day until our appointment at Schaumburg Mall because that's how crappy the weather was. And this house online looked pretty decent. This is a definitely a warning for everyone. Do not just trust the pictures you see on Zillow. You do not know how old those pictures are. You do not know how much they've been edited, if they've just added furniture in. You just don't know. You need to go look or hire someone to go look for you. You can talk to a realtor about hiring someone. Realtors are not allowed to push you one way or the other, and there's a lot of things you just can't see on a video chat. You can always do that with the realtor if you want. Have them go in with their camera rolling, or if you're doing a video chat, and you can kind of see things as they're seeing them. But they are not allowed to push you one way or the other when you're buying or selling a house. I personally believe a good realtor will make you be a little more down to earth and be like, hey, you know, you said this is not what you wanted. You told me what your top end of your budget was. I'm just going to tell you this house is going to exceed that, and it's everything you said you didn't want. So just remember that. Because, you know, in the long run, if things don't go well, who's going to get the bullshit review on Google? It's going to be your realtor. So just remember, they got to be pretty straightforward and honest. To a certain degree, they just can't influence your buying decisions anyway. So the house in Crystal Lake was the first one we looked at. It was really far out. It wasn't really even in Crystal Lake. It's kind of on the Crystal Lake outskirts. you know, the pictures online were great. It had a pool. It had a tree house. It looked really nice. It was actually a single-family home cut up into three decent-sized apartments and one very small apartment. And, you know, when we got there, we realized pretty quickly it was all bad. You could see mold on the pool. You could see, and I do mean mold, not just mildew, mold had been growing on the pool. The tree house had long ago collapsed, and the tree had collapsed into it and kept growing. You could see that there was all kinds of other problems. You could tell there had been rodents in the garage. There was water actually flowing out of the garage down the driveway when we were there. There was missing stairs leading up to the exterior apartment, and it just kept getting worse. Like, you know, there were illegal entries into the apartments. Like, one of the big things the apartment says they technically leave, they're supposed to have 2 points of entry for safety purposes. When the second entry for every single apartment is a primary residence, that's a problem. I'm not sure about the legality of it. One of them actually was illegal, or the lady who showed us the place told us that straight up, like, oh, that's illegal, you can't do that. When she realized that the closet was the second entry for the tiny apartment, like, there was not even a lock on it on her side, just on the primary residence side. So you could just unlock that and pop into her apartment when she wasn't there. And we know it was a lady because there was a bunch of sports bras we had to walk under to see this little apartment. You know, and we pretty quickly knew that wasn't for us. My husband, just for fun, kept looking at things. Like, he decided he had to know how bad the garage was, opened the garage door, the smell that came through the house, it was not just rotten mold, there was something dead in there, and there was a couple inches of water. In the basement, where I had originally thought, well, maybe if this works out, this would be a great income kitchen. You know, we could block it off from the animals, and it's big enough that it's easy to host. The only downside being that this is also where the 2 bedrooms for our kids would be. And we very quickly realized, nope, it can't be, because they're not technically 2 legal bedrooms. It is one big room that is closed off from the primary room, which was a living room and kitchen area, with a wooden curtain. Like, you know, the kind you would see in an old classroom from the, like, 70s, or from a church. The shag carpeting in the super 70s kitchen didn't bother me at all. It was bad. Like, the tile floor that was part of the kitchen was actually only visible from the front of it. Once you got behind it and looked down, there was no more tile floor. And there was this weird open gap that was like, oh, you know, it's like a crawl space. There's probably a door that's just not there. Well, there was no door. There was never a door. The crawl space under the stairs that actually exceeded underneath the whole top floor, except where the basement was filled with water, and you could just hear it and see it running in. So just bad. That house was about, I think, $320,000. Giant yard, just it was a dumpster fire, and there's gonna be a lot of cleanup. And the neighbor right next door, also giant dumpster fire of a house with a lot of garbage in the yard. It wasn't gonna work. But after there, we started more seriously actually looking. We looked around in the outer suburbs, like Elgin. We looked at St. Charles, Aurora. We glanced at Naperville and laughed at ourselves because we could not afford that. My husband ended up being able to find jobs, but they were all in Lombard area. Excuse me, I'm trying not to burp. Lombard just plains where the job offers were coming from. So we kind of decided, okay, well, you know, I decided at that point to go to school in downtown Chicago, no matter which school I picked, and he had decided to work in the Lombard area most likely. So we knew we didn't want to live all the way out there anyway. So we reined in where we were looking. Looked at a number of houses in Lombard that we really liked. Prices in Lombard were ranging from $350,000 all the way up to about $450,000, and $450,000 was our top end of our budget. For the most part, we didn't really see anything that we loved or liked, except for I really liked this house. It was a cute little Cape Cod built in 1925. It had an original bathroom with all the original fixtures. That worked. The bathtub needed some assistance, but other than that, it was cute. But then there were all the other issues that, you know, we even looked at the house a second time to say, hey, how bad are these issues? Like, we saw it on a rainy, cloudy day. Let's go back and look on a sunny, hot day. And yeah, there were a lot more issues than we had originally noticed on a In the bright light. There was a lot more cracks on the walls. The floor wasn't in very good shape, but I didn't care. I wanted the house anyway. So we put in our offer. The owners of the house said, no, this is the price we want. And then our realtor told us, hey, you know, they said $375,000. They will not be coming down any further, is what their realtor has kind of told me. The realtor has also very much suggested that they will most likely not be open to you getting any sort of inspection. It's gonna be an as-is deal. And then he told us straight up, you know, legally, they can't ask you not to do an inspection. And not only can they not ask you to do an inspection, they cannot block you from doing an inspection. They did not advertise the house as is, so they can't, you know, really come back and ask for it now. So we went back and said, okay, 360 is our top number. You can throw it at them. We'll see what happens. They said no, 375, no inspections. We said we're out. They took another 3 months to sell their house. They sold their house the day we closed on ours. So, haha on them. They did get their 375 though. So there's that. You know, it was just kind of heartbreaking looking for houses. I guess a lot of people who are probably looking for houses who have a tight budget know the feeling. Like, we originally wanted at least a 4-bedroom. My husband wanted a 5-bedroom, big garage, all this, that, and the other, a large yard. Our budget for Chicago said, good luck with the 4-bedroom. If you do get a 4-bedroom, they're going to be small bedrooms. Good luck with having a master bath and 2 other full bathrooms on your budget. You know, you'll be lucky if you get a full bathroom and half bathroom. Yeah, it's just a lot of giving in. The closer you get to the city, the less you get for the same amount of money. I'm sure most people realize that. We only live technically 10 miles from the city. We live about 17 miles from downtown. We did not get everything we wanted. We did get a charming and beautiful 100-year-old house. It is only 3 bedrooms. We have a bathroom and a half. We have a unfinished basement with asbestos in it. So, you know, just be aware, if you're going to move from a small area to a big city, you're going to give up some things. You're going to have to decide what's really important to you. For us, distance was important. We didn't want to be so far, either one of us, that it would be a huge deal if our daughter got sick. Like, for me, I get a phone call saying, hey, your kid's sick, you have to go get her, your husband's unavailable. Then for me, it's a much bigger deal. It's okay, if I don't catch the right train, that might be an hour wait, 45 minute wait, something. And then I have to go home, walk home, get the car, then go get her. And so my husband's like, you know, it's really important that I not be too far away. It's kind of how we debate, picked out where we end up living. Hands get tired after a while. Eventually, guys, I will figure this out, and I'll have a good place to put my phone while I do this. Or my husband will finally find the microphone he promised he would find, because he has one for his own podcast. He just doesn't know where it's at, and he hasn't actually looked. So, eventually, this will work out better, and I'll not have to sit here and hold a cell phone while I do this. But yeah, so looking for houses is heartbreaking. We would find houses that we wanted to look at. Like, we actually lined up about 80 houses that we had requested to see. Out of the 80 houses we requested to see, we only were able to see about 30 of them. We took, I believe, 4 separate trips up here to look at houses. The house out in Lombard that we made the offer on, that we saw on our second trip. And we had lined up 10 houses to see that day. We were actually only able to see 7 of them. And then our second trip up, I mean, we made another trip to take a double look at the Lombard house. We didn't really, you know, look at anything else that day. We did go to an open house in the same area. It was a comparable house. We didn't love that house, so we stuck with the one that we had originally liked. Maybe we should have given in a little bit on the other one. It might have been a better deal for us. But we're happy we ended up where we ended up. But that was kind of what every single trip was like, is we would give our realtor 20 different houses. By the time we were actually able to come up, at least 10 of them had sold. By the time we actually got to him, he was like, hey, I'm so sorry. You know, originally we had this money lined up. However, you're only going to be able to see 6 or 7 houses today because all these houses sold. And then we'd get to some of these houses and he would just stop and be like, well, this house just sold, but we're going to go in anyway. Because they said we could. Even the house we ended up purchasing, it was a very similar story of, you know, they were already in negotiations with someone else when we looked at it. So, it's rough. If you're not ready to buy, just be aware. It's probably going to slip through your fingers the same day you look at it, at least in this area. We saw a really great house out in Western Springs that is $425 or something along those lines, but then it needed over $100,000 worth of work. I like in my mind I've concocted this story that it was, you know, it was built in 1940. I decided that a family moved in probably the 60s, and the same family lived there until probably 5 years ago when grandma passed away or had to move into a home, and then the family just kind of kept the house, whether it was in probate or they just kept it because they couldn't get rid of it, like they couldn't bring themselves to do it. And it just kind of started to fall in worse and worse disrepair with no one taking care of it, no one stopping by. And now that the house is out of probate, they gotta sell it. Do I know that's what's really going on? No. Do I kind of hope it's at least something like that versus a house that was just neglected and someone lived in it until it started falling apart and then they realized they had to go because, like, we looked at it, my husband fell through the ceiling of one of the rooms. So there you go. Not like painfully bad, but his foot went through a little bit. And you could see the mark from downstairs, and we were just like, "Oh." Our realtor's like, "Yeah, don't worry about it. There's insurance for that." So there's that. You got to make sure also you have a really good realtor. Like our realtor was the kind of guy, he didn't really suffer bullshit. He was just kind of like, "Nope." If he saw something that wasn't right, he would say something about it. He never really tried to influence our opinions. He just kind of listened to us and what we were thinking, and would talk to us, and you know, he pretty much, he was there. He minded his business. He got to know us a little bit. I enjoyed him quite a bit. So if you want to move to like the Naperville area, he's probably your guy. You know, but that also means you have more money than we did. I think he just enjoyed working with broke people who had to come down and figure out what they could really get. Anyway, we saw a couple other dumpster fire houses in Chicago. We saw some scary things that were being put up for sale for relatively high prices. Like, I mean, actually in Chicago, by the way, there was a single family home that had been split up into three apartments quite illegally. The person selling it, I don't remember if I talked about it last time or not, but the person selling it was selling it as was, wasn't alerting the tenants that the house was being sold, anything. And it was just like, this is just all kinds of bad. And the pictures he sold, it was just went from bad to worse. And it's like, oh, this is just bad. Like, this is worse than bad. Like, every single room you're showing is bad, and it looks like a drug den, and you have tenants, and you're not even, I don't even think it's legal to sell a place and not tell them it's up for sale. I don't think it's remotely legal what you're doing, but okay. We didn't even go look at that house. Like, it was that sort of bad. There's another house that we looked at. It looked lovely in the pictures, and just thing after thing went wrong with us trying to see it. One of the biggest things being the guy we had contacted, it was before we really started working with our realtor. So we contacted the guy selling the house. He's like, well, no, you're working with this guy, so you're gonna have to go through him. And then when we're like, okay, we want to go see this house, like we were in the city and ready to go, he was like, hey guys, I'm so sorry. Like, our realtor, like the guy we ended up working with until we found our home, was just like, you have to give them 24 hours notice. They said they didn't have it. I was like, they've had a week notice. Like, we told their realtor a week ago we wanted to see this house, and he just told us 2 days ago, you know, you would have to be the one to show it to us. So that kind of sucked. We did try to see it again a couple other times. It kept being an issue, so we never got to see it. Kind of sucked. I think our realtor ended up reporting that one. So he reported a couple of realtors all working with us. It cracks me up. Some of you are like, want to tattle? I'm like, he's awesome. Anyway, he takes care of good clients. But you know, we found our house on our final trip up. It was the trip where I was about to give up. We saw a whole bunch of houses we didn't even want or like. Two of them actually sold while we were in them. I was kind of giving up. I was like, dude, we're gonna have to figure something out. Like, maybe we need to talk to your parents about taking one or both of our pets and just bringing the cat with us so we can get an apartment because we can't keep looking. We gotta get here, you know, and at least an apartment we could be in a month. Whereas finding a house at this point, it might be months before we can get in. So I was at that point, and the last house we looked at, which our realtor knew we weren't gonna love, he'd already showed it to a number of people and thought it was a terrible house. And he told us after we had already laughed at it and said, no, we don't want this house. Like, this is not a winner for me. He's like, yeah, I don't think it would be. I already knew it was a dumpster fire, but I'm not allowed to say anything. It's like, oh, good, cool. But yeah, we actually sat at that house as kitchen island, everyone on their own electric devices, looking for other houses we could see in this area. It was getting too expensive to come up and stay hotels. It was getting too expensive just to come up in general, like eating out, sleeping, like getting hotels for 2 days. Like it just ends up costing so much money. We felt like we were starting to overdo it with having my in-laws watch the kids. Like it just gets really hard. We made our teenager be part of the looking because we wanted him to be a part of it. We wanted to hear what he had to say. Like we really hated a house. We didn't want to, buy it and have him hate it. But yeah, it just ended up being pretty rough. The house we bought, we honestly got really lucky. We found it online. I asked if there was any way we could get in to see it. The family living there actually vacated the house midday on, I think it was a Saturday, and just like, oh, yep, we're out. You guys go ahead and take a look. We're able to come in and look, and you could tell they had just been here because the lights were all still on when we got here. The door was not locked. So they very clearly had vacated. Excuse me, I'm gonna take a quick drink. And then from there, like I said, they had already been in negotiations. We came in an asking price. I don't know what the previous people offered, but my understanding was relatively low. Like I hope whoever they were, they ended up finding something. Our big thing was we wrote a letter just explaining, hey, thank you for letting us see the house. You didn't really need to do that because you already had an offer. Just want to let you know we loved it. We loved the fact that you guys appear to be trying to restore the house versus just remodel it. If you pick us, that is our intention, is just to. Oh, hold on. My dog's about to freak out. Sorry, guys. My dog was freaking out. We had raccoons on our front porch. Happens. That's life. There's an abandoned house across the street from us where raccoons have taken residence. So, shit happens. That's life. You can probably hear her right here now. She's very close by. She's very upset. Almost as upset as she was the other day when she heard the lions roaring half a mile away. And the same raccoons, probably. She heard them all at the same time. She was not happy. Anyway, we were able to get this house. It took about a month for all the negotiations and everything to go through. There wasn't a whole lot of back and forth, but there was back and forth. The attorney we had to work with wasn't great at getting things to the sellers, to a point where our realtor ended up doing a lot of the work for us with the reaching out and just like, hey, this chick is sitting on it. She's taking her sweet time. Like, we told her 5 minutes after she asked what our comeback was on the offer, and it's been 4 days and she hasn't said anything to them. Like, it's been 4 business days and she hasn't said anything to them. Now it's going into a weekend, and he was like, oh no, I'm on it. Don't worry. Which, oh, hold on. Sorry, I don't know. She's barking at this time. Anyway, our lawyer wasn't great, so our attorney did a lot of the work. The previous owners are still our neighbors. They actually just moved 2 houses down across the street to a bigger house, with a bigger yard. I personally wanted a smaller house than what we got. I wanted something easier to deal with. Oh, that's why. There's raccoons right outside my house still. Yay. Yay, raccoons. Said no one has ever really dealt with raccoons that you don't want. Don't get me wrong, I like raccoons. Baby raccoons are very sweet. However, a group of 4 adult raccoons are not very sweet. At all. They're not cute, they're not sweet, they will rip off your face. Anyway. Sorry, I'm listening to the raccoons. What we asked for when we tried to buy the house, we asked them for asbestos testing and possible mitigation. The big answer to that was absolutely not, which legally, I mean, my husband decided that would be his cross for whatever reason, which I thought that was a terrible idea for that to be his cross. It's just like, looking at it from a legal standpoint, of course they don't want to do asbestos testing. If they do asbestos testing and comes back as asbestos, we back out of the deal. They now have to tell everyone the house does for sure have asbestos. That is a scary thing. Asbestos is terrifying. Because all you hear about asbestos is cancer, cancer, cancer. What they don't tell you in those is, hey, it's, usually when asbestos is broken that it ends up being a problem. As long as you don't mess with it, you should be fine. Like my big rule with the asbestos in our house is the kids don't go downstairs. We do not have a HVAC system. We have a old boiler with radiators, so we don't really have to worry about the asbestos just flowing through the air and blowing through it the same kind of way. So it should be fine, hopefully, and it's not broken. So we should be fine. But anyway, I didn't blame them for that, but God, I hate moving. I don't suggest moving. Stay where you're at. Moving is awful. And another thing I'll say about buying and selling houses, don't get a house if you don't want to take care of it. Like straight up, do not buy a house you do not want to take care of. If you don't like doing yard work, and I don't just mean mowing the lawn, I mean actual yard work, don't get a house. If you don't like scrubbing your floors and you think taking a Swiffer to it occasionally is scrubbing your floor, don't buy a house. It is not. You gotta actually scrub your floors. You gotta get down on your hands and knees and scrub the goddamn floor at least once a month, if not more often. You shouldn't buy a house if you're gonna be lazy about it. Curb appeal matters. It's, you buy a house, you think, well, it's just me, it's my property, I can do what I want. But you also have neighbors. You need to respect your neighbors with the way you take care of your house. If they care a lot about what it looks like, you don't want to be the house that looks crappy. So just think on that if you choose to buy or sell a house. And also if you don't make enough to take care of a house, even if you make enough to make mortgage payment, but you don't make enough to fix anything up, don't buy a house. Houses have all kinds of problems. Like, I know so many people who they get houses, they can just barely make the mortgage, but they already know it's a fixer-upper, and then things keep getting worse, like, and they can't afford to fix it, and they're like, well, what are we supposed to do? It's like, well, you should have never bought the damn house. You knew you couldn't afford to fix it in the first place, so why would you buy it? Now it's to a point where you have to fix it, or you can't really maintain the house anymore. What are you doing? Anyway, that's pretty much the end of the buying and selling story. Looking sucks. It's just kind of very grating and heartbreaking. Buying sucks. It all sucks. Anyway, I love my house. I love my neighborhood. It is a great community that we moved into. I will say that. I love our neighbors. We've actually made some pretty good friends with our neighbors already, which is awesome. We've been here since August. And let's see. Next subject will be the orientation at Kendall. I went to my orientation at Kendall in really late August. We had been living here for about 2.5 weeks. It was my first time going to Chicago completely by myself. It was my first time taking the train by myself. It wasn't so bad. I went early enough in the morning that, going into the city from the train station isn't hard at all. Like, the train stops right in front of you. You can't really fuck that one up. Coming home, it's pretty easy to screw up. Like, I just screwed that up. We were in downtown Chicago. I took the kids to go see the lights this last month, and my husband had another thing he had to do down there, so we decided to make it an afternoon of it. On the way home, the train station was having some problems. I'm blaming the train station. But anyway, we took an express train. It was an accident. We ended up not being able to come straight home. Like, we blew by our stop. We blew by all the stops that were close by, and ended up over in Downers Grove, and what I noted was how everybody else's town, like, went all out along the tracks, like two towns before us, and the five towns we got to drive through after that on the train. Everyone went all out along the tracks to make it look welcoming, to make their downtowns as gorgeous and pretty as possible. And then there was our downtown, which is just kind of like, oh, well, it exists. It's kind of like, okay, well, we picked the one that doesn't go all out. I see. And whether that's finances or just, a city council that doesn't want to go all out, I don't know. We just moved here. We'll figure that one out. But for my orientation, I got down there. It was a nice warm day. I showed up to the building onto the correct floor right on time. Like, it was supposed to start at 8:30. I was in there at 8:30. I actually thought it started at 9, but then I saw the email and I booked it to the school as quickly as I could, and made it right up, down on time. I was the fourth person there. Most of the other of the 30 people who also attended my orientation showed up 10 minutes late. And the funny thing was, the main subject of the day was being professional. Showing up late is not professional. A lot of people, I don't think, understand even now, 3 months in, that the whole point of the school is to teach you how to be professional. It is job training. It is not just school. It is job training. It's not an extension of high school. It is, they want you to go out into the workforce and to make them look good. They want you to be the best that you can be and not show up 15 minutes late and then shrug your shoulders when people are like, well, what the hell? Which, just so everyone's aware, the chef instructors there do get kind of like, yeah, you can come in 15 minutes late. That's not right. I'm gonna mark you down for the day, though. You know, oh, you showed up 2 hours late to a 5 hour class. Well, you missed half the class. Good job. And there is a lot of that, actually, of people showing up super late for no real apparent reason. It was a constant issue. Anyway, so through orientation, there was four of us that were over the age of 30, just four. And there was, I would say I was probably the youngest of that group of people. I had one person just deciding to go after her dream too. She was 60 years old. She's like, you know, I realized I wanted to be a chef. And good for her. Like, that's awesome. She's 60 years old and going to night school to become a chef. There was a guy who was going for hospitality management. He was already in the culinary world and he has a culinary business, but he wanted to go back for the management part of it. And then there is the lady who, she is actually the head butcher for the head butcher for Jewel, like Jewel Osco, and she was going back for her hospitality management degree. So, you know, two people who are just working on their degrees and making them better, and two of us just deciding, hey, you know, it's time to get up and do what we really want to do and chase a dream, and that's kind of awesome. The food served that day was not great. If anyone's curious, it was a turkey sandwich, a Caesar salad, some kind of soup that I didn't get because I got the Caesar salad. I think that day it wasn't even a Caesar salad. It was a nice fresh summer salad. Now every day since then they've served Caesar salad and I missed the summer salad. It had a raspberry vinaigrette that was really good. The dessert that day was a really dry cake. I'm not sure what kind of cake it was. I didn't really tell you. It was, and I don't know how to classify it. It was a white cake base with berry gelée with too much gelatin, and kind of a mousse on top, I think. I don't really know what it was. It didn't taste like almonds or anything. It was, I don't know, it kind of seemed like it was supposed to be a chiffon cake, but it wasn't. But yeah, if anyone doesn't know what a gelée is, it is the French term for jelly, and you know, jelly in everywhere but America means gelatin dessert, like jello. Now we think of jelly and we think of a fruit spread without the seeds and all that, and no chunks, but it actually is just supposed to be like jello. Yeah, it was not great. But you know, now that I've been there a couple months, I realized that was students learning, that whatever, whoever made that cake, it's someone who was learning as their first go and was good enough to make it to the floor. So there's that. That day we met our administrative staff. We met Chef Leah, who is the dean of the school. We met Chef Kang, who is the assistant dean. We met Miss Bosco, who is the career bridge student advisor. In other words, she is the career advisor. She is the person who, if there's some place you want to try to work, she might have the connection to get you in there. Then do a stage, which will be part of your culinary training if you choose to go that way. And a stage is pretty much a, we try each other on for size before you get a job. And sometimes it has nothing to do with trying to get a job there. It's like, a, hey, I just want to know what it's like in your kitchen. Like, I've always been curious about here. I personally know I'm trying to get a stage a couple of different places when we get back into session. I want to do a stage at a fine dining establishment. I want to do a stage at a couple of different places, like smaller bakeries. And then I want to do a stage at a couple of different chocolate shops. I'm not even sure I want to do chocolate. It's more of a gross curiosity comparing it to Chocolate Manor, and how they operate here compared to how the way we had to operate there, and how they do here. Like, you know, is it a case of if my boss could somehow relocate to the Chicagoland area, which she has succeeded and done really, really well. I like to believe she would have. I believe Davenport, Iowa just wasn't the right market for what she was trying to do. And what she was trying to do was awesome, by the way. Beyond that, we met our student, like our book advisor, not our book advisors. I'm sorry, I'm so tired, guys. It's almost 10. I'm old. But we met our financial advisors that day. We met our regular academic advisors. We learned a lot about, if you see that you're on a hold, it's usually a financial hold. You need to talk to a financial advisor, especially like I personally have a grant and a loan. I will always be on a financial hold at the school. So I have to talk to my financial advisor, who then reaches out to my academic advisor and says, "Hey, go ahead and let her get registered for her next round of classes, so long as she's in good standing." And I've been in good standing. It's been really hard to be in good standing financially there, but we're making it work. You only got 4 more quarters, so hopefully we do okay. Other than that, we got to walk through the kitchens again, and they're lovely, wonderful, nice kitchens. If you watch The Bear, the kitchens, when the old guy and Tina are, going to school, it is Kendall College. The chef shown is an actual chef in the school, and it is the actual kitchen that we students get to use. That particular kitchen is, they didn't even show them in the actual kitchen. They just showed them in the hallway that stretches between kitchens. It's an extra little prep space where the walk-in cooler is. So, there's some things on that show that aren't accurate, if anyone's curious. Like, you get to see the old man sitting there after everyone else has gone home by himself, kind of late, chopping vegetables and making a big mess. That does not happen. You are not allowed to do that, especially as an incoming student. You must have a chef instructor there. You don't get to just get to hang out as a new student. That's a huge liability. And you're not allowed to just waste your vegetables. So, shit's expensive. I wish I was able to just stay there and practice and have it not be a big deal. That'd be great. I have made croissants that didn't suck for Christmas. Anyway, one of the big things they did suggest when we did orientation was bring a bag to bring things home in. I would suggest for Kendall next year, maybe say bring a duffel bag, a large duffel bag to bring home all your crap. Oh, and FYI, it's going to be heavy. That is something they did not suggest. I was lucky. I'd already decided I wanted a locker and paid for my locker. It's $120, I think, per quarter. I thought it was just going to be per year, but it might be per quarter. I'll have to figure that one out. But yeah, $120 well spent, because I was able to dump a lot of things in that locker and not have to carry it home on the train. I still couldn't even fit all my uniforms in my book bag to bring home. I could fit, what was it? I fit 3 of my chef jackets, all the pants, the aprons, the towels I was able to fit in. Thankfully, my very first class, I did not need all the stuff that I had. Like, I didn't need my pastry kit or anything. So when it took me a while to take care of all that stuff, it just really wasn't a big deal. No matter what, whether you do pastry or culinary, bring a special duct tape that is clearly going to be yours, whether it has a fun design on it or, a bright neon color where you can write on it. Just make sure you mark your stuff as yours, because it's super easy. Everyone has the exact same stuff. It's too easy to confuse your stuff with other people's stuff. And it's expensive stuff to lose. Like, in my first 3 weeks of actual kitchen classes, someone took my offset spatula. Like, I cannot. It just magically disappeared. And then one day when I was sanitarian and I was cleaning, I reached underneath a couple of tables, and guess what popped out of someone else's table underneath it? It just fallen, got kicked under. It was my offset spatula. It had my tape on it. And I was like, that's cute. That's great. Someone took it. I kind of already know who, and I don't think it was malicious at all. I think they just grabbed it and didn't think twice about it. And then, a week later, they were complaining about all the stuff that had gone missing. They couldn't find any of their 2 small offset spatulas. You only get one, if you're curious. And they couldn't find a couple of their piping tips. They couldn't find their spatula. It's just, you gotta keep track of your stuff. you gotta move with a certain amount of urgency to make sure you don't lose your things. But yeah, I pay for that locker, guys. It's totally 100% worth paying for the locker. And from there, I just took the train home. It was not so bad. When school started, we had been given an extra list of extra things that we needed, books included. Books I kind of stalled out on. I was afraid to pay for them because books are expensive. Like, all books are expensive. And quite basically, like, I've already been in college, and one of the biggest things that irritated me is, well, I bought all these books, and I actually only used one book for all the classes. Like, again, that it feels like what is happening in pastry school is they're like, well, you need these four books. Only one of them's required, though. And then you find out that, well, actually, you kind of need the other book, but you don't really need it, but you kind of need it. And it's just like, man, books are expensive. Academic books to me are one of the biggest horrible things in the world. But okay, I'm gonna let you guys go. It is almost 10 o'clock. It's getting late. My throat hurts. I'm thinking getting sick, so that's fun. I might try to record one more episode if I can get this one edited and posted in the next couple days. I'll try to record one more before we leave for vacation. And that one will pretty much just cover my first round of classes, which was pastry science and English. English is lame. Anyway, pastry science was pretty awesome. I loved my chef instructor for that. His name was Chef Tom. He is awesome. I hope I have him again for my breads class. Anyway, we'll go over that. I'm trying to figure out the format for actually going over classes. At first, I thought I was going to do it day by day or week by week, and now I'm like, I don't know. That's going to be a lot when the classes really get going, especially since I'm trying to play catch up with it. That's 12 weeks of classes I have to cover, and I start school in what, 14 days, so probably won't be doing it that way. But I hope everyone has a good night. When I get back from Disney, we'll probably talk a little bit about the food of Disney, take a break from the moving to Chicago thing, and just talk about the vacation and the fun of taking a vacation we really can't afford. Truth is, we paid for it and arranged everything, and then did some flight rearrangements because of school. So, but we paid for everything and arranged this long before we knew we were moving. So, there's that. I hope everyone has a good night. For those who celebrate, happy second night. Probably won't talk to anyone again until Hanukkah is over. So, hopefully, it's a wonderful Hanukkah for everybody. Have a wonderful night, guys. We'll see you next time. Remember to share and tell everyone about me. Feel free to share any constructive criticism, share with any friends who might be doing the same thing I'm doing and trying to start over. It'd be good to talk to other people doing the same sort of stuff. So, have a good night. Thank you.